Stop it. Power panel, Jake Huger, John Iroh. Look at Nina Turner, everybody. Okay, of course, Nina is a former Ohio State Senator. She's a professor, the founder of We Are Someone, and she's a senior fellow at the Institute on Race, Power, and Political Economy. If I keep reading her bio, we'll never be done with this hour.
You just renamed my organization, We Are Someone. We are somebody, baby.
Did I say someone? That's impossible for me to screw up your. I mean, we've said that 100 times.
But we all are someone, though. I love it.
That's true. Well, I guess that's technically true, but we are somebody.
There's how Nina always says, "Hello, y'all."
Hey, Yins. No, she didn't. Maybe that's Summer Lee, but not Nina Turner. Okay. So, all right, guys, we got a hell of a show for you guys today. Obviously, super serious topics. We'll get into it in a second.
Yes.
On the brink of a giant Middle East war, but also lighter topics like Trump's little dirty trick at Chick-fil-A. So, if you haven't seen what that trick is, you're going to want to see that because this is how politics is played, and it's amazing and interesting. All right. So, John's got the news.
Yeah, it involves a special sauce, and it's gross.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, we're going to get to that later. Let's start with something far more serious with this.
UNICEF says a vehicle waiting to enter northern Gaza was hit by live ammunition. Three bullets hitting the car, which they say was clearly marked with the UN logo. Now, this again raises concerns of Israeli military conduct following that deadly aid worker attack on the World Central Kitchen workers just last week. Now, UNICEF is saying they've raised the incident with Israeli authorities, adding that humanitarians continue to face risks in their work to reach people in need.
So yes, more humanitarian aid vehicles being fired on by the IDF. Now, in this case, thankfully, the UNICEF workers did survive, and they were fired at with small arms, not bombed. But again, it was vehicles that were very clearly marked. And let's pause for a moment just to acknowledge the fact that it is amazing that there are people brave enough to still man those vehicles, to go into those areas knowing that you could be bombed, you could be fired at, despite the fact that you've done everything you're supposed to do in this circumstance. But while they survived, very often the aid they're trying to transport into Gaza does not, because the policies, the procedures for checking and approving of that aid seems punitive and random, arbitrary in practice. And to really make that clear, let's show you some of the aid items that have been rejected during these searches. So remember, it's supposed to help people in need in a war zone. So things like crutches and generators for hospitals and maternity kits and thread and medical scissors in children's aid kits, basic things that you might need for a variety of different procedures. But that's not all. Clamps and scissors and scalpels and surgical tools and ventilators and wheelchairs, obviously a very dangerous weapon. Syringes and x-ray machines. So again, some of the most basic stuff you would need to be able to operate like a field hospital or try to get one of the many hospitals that have been bombed back up and running, those have been rejected. And while those are the more critical ones, it gets almost silly in practice sometimes what can be rejected and for what reason. So as perhaps one of the most extreme examples, one US official who visited the Rafah crossing point last month described meeting with aid workers who were deeply frustrated by the seeming arbitrariness of the rejected items. They included a pallet of chocolate croissants, which was apparently blocked because the Israelis deemed them luxury foods inappropriate for a war zone. Bear in mind, there are many, many, many people actively starving right now. They could have used those croissants to maintain their life, not to feel luxurious. It's food, it's calories, that's what it is. What does it matter if it's fancy? It's not a weapon, it's not gonna hurt anyone, and it's desperately needed. But anyway, look, we're criticizing this, the aid organizations are criticizing it, journalists who have seen this in practice are as well, but you also do have some politicians weighing in, including Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen, who said that the review process is totally arbitrary. When you're turning back maternity kits and water purification tablets, that is a deliberate effort not to allow desperately needed goods into Gaza. There is no rational justification. But perhaps even worse than the rejecting of the individual items, the clamps, the wheelchair, whatever. It's the consequences when that happens. Because when an item is rejected, it is not the only thing that is not allowed to go in. Entire trucks are turned back. If you have those scissors in a children's aid kit, then that truck does not make it in. I don't know what other food might have been with the luxury food item of chocolate croissants. But unfortunately, neither do those in Gaza because they didn't get access to it because it was rejected. And almost every step along the way, it seems like the point of all of this is to stop things that are needed from getting in. Or else at this late date, the policies would have already long been changed. But unfortunately, that is the situation on the ground right now. And we have more, but what do you make of this?
Yeah, so guys, first of all, you need context in all these stories because Israel will then counter with, oh no, I don't know what you're talking about. This is super normal. And we're sending these things in so quickly, you'd never believe it. Correct, we would never believe it. So and there's a reason why we wouldn't believe it, because Israel said it, of course not. Israel said many things that are correct in the past, before this conflict, etc. As with all governments, sometimes they tell the truth and oftentimes they lie. So in this case, how do we know who's telling the truth? Well, as John pointed out, literally every aid organization, every reporter on the scene is saying, not only is Israel wrong in their claims about, oh, they're letting things through perfectly fine, but the aid organizations say this is the worst they have ever seen any government react in terms of bringing in humanitarian aid. The worst out of all the things that they have seen. So that gives you some degree of context. Israel says, oh, we're sending it in perfectly fine. It's 20% of the traffic of this type of material that was coming in before the conflict. So now, if you think 20%, well, I get it, there's a conflict, etc. But remember, some of the stuff that they're bringing in is food. Now, most of the food, water, and blankets get to go through. And so thanks God for that, right? But even those are slowed down by the giant lines of trucks. So if you're only getting 20% of the food you used to get, only 20% of the medical equipment in a best case scenario that you're getting in, and for the medical equipment, it ain't anywhere near 20%. Well, you actually needed that food and the medical equipment for in normal times. You need them even more now, and they're getting it in a trickle. Then the next question. So the question of whether Israel's telling the truth or not on this is settled. Unless you think you're one of those people, and there are these people who say, no, I will take Israel's word over every aid organization in the world and every reporter in the world. If you're in that group, I can't help you anyway. You're never gonna listen to facts or reason. So then now we move on to, why are they doing it? And that one is a little bit more speculative, right? One, Israel could say, I am really concerned. Those syringes, if you collect enough of them, could be turned into a tiny little bomb. And then they could, and then, whoa, we can't have that. So I'm super concerned. And the maternity kits, if you put all of them together, it might help moms. And so, look, even if you take like the crutches and the children's scissors, and you're in that camp of giving Israel every benefit of the doubt. Well, what if Hamas comes at him with that scissors and they cut them? Guys, look at this. Who's David and who's Goliath? Because Israel keeps pretending that they're tiny little David in this very tough neighborhood of Goliaths. And they're gonna get, Israel has nukes. Let alone the fact that they just literally obliterated 50% of the buildings in Gaza. And 85% of the citizens of Gaza are displaced. And you're worried about children's scissors or maybe syringes that could be turned into tubes that could be turned into pea shooters. That is not a legitimate concern at all. But then when you go further down the list, oh, I don't like croissants. You know what, it's a luxury food item. We're now banning anything we consider a luxury food. Okay, this is gonna go towards intent. They, sleeping bags with zippers, that's banned. What are they gonna do? Collect all the zippers from the sleeping bags and then do something with it? Look, okay, I guess, again, that tiny little group of zealots that defend Israel will say, of course, zippers kill people, okay? And we've gotta make sure we stop in those maternity kits, then those women will be able to deliver their babies perfectly fine instead of having them die. Oh, I see. So listen, guys, my guess as to why they're doing this and the guess of many, 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 many people is that it's not an accident that they're hitting aid convoys. It's not an accident. They just hit journalists again. One of the journalists had their leg blown off. And it's not an accident that they've slowed aid tremendously and worse than any conflict these aid organizations have seen. they're trying to put in their minds maximum pressure on the Palestinians. And maximum pressure includes the starvation of over 1 million people. So again, if you're one of the zealots, you'll say, yeah, of course, it's their fault and it's Hamas's fault for hiding behind their starving babies. Like, they sometimes lose a thread on the different excuses that they use, right? So, but for the rest of us that live in the sane world, this is atrocious. And not only is it literally killing Palestinians as we speak, but it is absolutely destroying the reputation of Israel. If you're in a zealot, no, you're like, oh no, everybody already hated zealot Israel because they're all anti-Semites. 200% of the world are anti-Semites and they hated us from the beginning. Well, actually some portion of the world are anti-Semites and they probably did hate you from the beginning. Is it 100%? Not anywhere near that, not anywhere near that. Now the whole world despises Israel because of anti-Semitism? No, because we see the dead babies and you won't let sleeping bags and maternity kits in. That's not hard to understand. And you're telling me you hit UNICEF again and you killed another, you hit a journalist again, including a CNN journalist. And oops, that's our 20,000th mistake in a row. Yeah, I'm in the crowd that says, I don't think it's a mistake at all. I think they're trying to drive the aid organizations out. They're trying to limit the aid as much as humanly possible so they can inflict maximum damage on the Palestinian civilians. Now, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt and thinking maybe they think in their twisted, immoral mind that's going to create pressure on the Palestinians to somehow do something against Hamas. But the more likely explanation is it's collective punishment. And what we're seeing is clearly a genocide. Nina.
Yep, that's it, Jink. I mean, you and John hit all the nails on the head. It is collective punishment. They are attempting to, and being very successful, might I add, in crushing the spirits of the Palestinians who are still alive and living through famine. And a point that John made, I mean, there is no way to live in luxury in a war zone. Those two things just don't go together. You know, Sesame Street, they would say one of these things just don't belong. There is no way to live luxuriously in a war zone. And Israel continues to make excuse after excuse after excuse. They're doing this accidentally on purpose. And that is why our country, the United States of America, has got to stop playing games. I mean, Jink, you talked about zippers and maternity kits. Meanwhile, Israel enjoys billions of dollars from the United States taxpayers. Hamas has nothing on that level. And the everyday Palestinians have nothing on that level. And let's say, for example, even if the Palestinian people did want to rise up against Hamas, how possibly would they do that with over 60% of their infrastructure blown up to smithereens and with millions of people, over 1 million people living in famine right now as we speak? They can barely make it day by day. And yes, all the agencies, I mean, Jink, your point is right. Either Israel is lying or all these agencies and got in the back room together and said, we're gonna try to just drum up these lies against Israel. This is one of the two. There is no middle ground here. This is collective punishment. This is genocide by accident on purpose.
Yeah. I don't know about the rest of you, but obviously, you know, for months and months now, you know, every once in a while we get those updates on how many people have died. And every single time it's like a punch in the gut. Because there's this sense of inevitability. Like, we were talking about how utterly unacceptable it was at 2,000 dead, 5,000 dead, 10,000 dead. And we know that 20 is coming. We know that 30 is coming. And oh God, now we're there. And something could have been done. Not a single one of those deaths needed to happen. And now I'm just wondering, are we gonna get accurate numbers on starvation, deaths from disease?
That's right. And John, another point I wanted to make is that we have 30,000+ that we know of. Mm-hmm. All three of us know, and our viewers know, that that number is much higher. It's only what they could calculate. It's much higher than what they can calculate. You better bet that it is. And so something has to give. And we're 6 months in too. Let us remind our viewers of that. 6 months in. How many more people have to die? How many more people have to endure the gut-wrenching feeling of starvation? How many more parents and grandparents have to bury their children and their grandchildren? Just how many more? I mean, Jink and John, I just want somebody to give us a number.
Well, why don't we see up Bernie Sanders, who had harsh words for the situation right there, and then we'll discuss more.
Israel continues to make it difficult to get the kind of humanitarian aid that desperate people need. So to my mind, the most important thing the United States government can do is say to Mr. Netanyahu, you know what? You cannot continue this disastrous, horrific war. You cannot allow children by the thousands to face starvation, or you're not getting another nickel. Now, I think one of the incongruities that a lot of people in America see is everybody is criticizing Netanyahu, and then they're saying in the next word, oh, here, Mr. Netanyahu, here's another $14 billion on top of the $3.5 billion you got. You're a terrible guy. You're doing terrible things. But here's your money. I think our policy has got to be very clear. Not another nickel for Netanyahu's right-wing extremist government while hundreds of thousands of people in Gaza face starvation, period.
And that is pretty clear. Bernie, for some time now, has been, I'd say, bolder than the vast majority of politicians, very straightforward on this. Obviously, his initial stances were criticized by many progressives, but he's going obviously there, far past where, like, President Biden, for instance, would go, where his criticism mostly comes in the form of, we get leaks about phone calls, and he was apparently quite harsh, quite stern on a phone call, but people are still dying. So that doesn't seem to be enough. In any event, it's the numbers, man. I dread it. I dread it. We're sitting here. We have the money. We have the resources. We have the vehicles. We could bring them in by ship. We could drop them by helicopters. All of these things could be done. We're not allowed to do it. We're simply not allowed to do it. We can ship over. We can transport weapons. We can do that. We can get them there very expeditiously. All sorts of different bombs, small bombs, 500 kilogram bombs, whatever you want. But when it comes to food, seemingly not. And we're talking about chocolate croissants. There are people trying to bake bird seed into things so that their kids won't starve to death. And to know that we're doing all of this while we have this domestic political movement in America that supposedly cares very, very deeply about every child's life, every baby's life. Well, they're starving there. And I know that they didn't have the good luck to be born in America so that you'd care about them, but they are starving, they are dying. And as a new parent, I just think about how utterly unbearable the moment-to-moment lives of so many people, nearly a million people, are right now. And it could be stopped. We could use our influence. And yet, what do we get? We hope that Bernie will say something. We hope that maybe he's talking to Biden behind the scenes. Yeah. And yet, it continues on day by day.
I have very strong thoughts on the different Democrats involved here, but I want to go to Bernie's campaign co-chair for his presidential run, Nina.
Yeah, thanks, Jing. I mean, it's time out for just talking. It's time for doing. And I agree. I'm glad that the senator is making it plain, but no more behind the scenes. This president is complicit, and by extension, he is making the American people complicit in genocide. You can't drop bombs and drop bread. You can't say you're going to have a temporary ceasefire. We need a permanent, lasting ceasefire. Let's get all the hostages back, and let's help that region, that area, create a situation where Palestinians and Israelis can live in security and peace. Nothing less. It's past time that even before October the 7th, even before what we see happening right now, but knowing all that we know, nothing else, nothing less can be acceptable. And John, your point about being a new parent, can you imagine? And no, they really don't give a damn about the kids here. Let's just say the kids don't have bombs dropping over their heads, but many children in this country go to bed hungry at night, or at least not full enough. And that means that their communities are too. So the reason why they don't care about what's happening over there is because they don't care about what's happening over here. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And blaming the Republicans is one thing, but all of these Democrats, including the president of the United States of America, is funded by AIPAC and AIPAC affiliated organizations. They are bought and sold, and they are grifters. And that is why we're not seeing action. Let's just tell the American people the truth.
100%. Let me back that up in many different ways. So first of all, I will give a call out to the Democrats that are heroes on this one. And so far, I can name approximately zero Republicans who are heroes on this. None. They all take AIPAC money. Speaker Johnson's number one donor is AIPAC, and number one donor of Ted Cruz and many other Republicans are AIPAC. The Republicans will do anything that Israel orders them to do. And the Democratic Party is a cesspool as well, but being fair, it's about 80% of the Democrats versus 100% of the Republicans. So in that 20% of good guy Democrats, they have called for a ceasefire. And yes, that means 80% of the Democrats in Congress, 6 months in, with a million people starving, 33,000 dead, still have not called for a ceasefire. 80% of Democrats. So if you think the Democratic Party overall are the good guys, I have a very rude awakening for all of you. So now the good guys for a second, the 20% that are actually the only people who have any morality in Washington DC. Second of all, Chris Van Hollen has been an unbelievable hero throughout this. And I mean that very literally, I can't believe it. So he was generally a normal establishment Democrat, and then he took a turn here. And it might be like, you know, they always talk about go to the border, go to the border. I don't think that helps 1% to look at a line on the sand in the border, right? But Chris Van Hollen went to Rafah in January. And there's some chance that he came back and thought, Jesus, after what I saw, no, I'm just not indecent enough to help Israel do this. But for whatever reason he did, Van Hollen has been awesome on this issue. And so that's coming from a guy who didn't normally always agree with Van Hollen. Bernie Sanders, the most successful Jewish American politician ever in American history, and had been a hero here. So you could nitpick, hey, when did he call for the ceasefire? When did he say this word or that word? But here he is on television, one of the most powerful politicians in America, saying, not another nickel to Israel. Stop the money until they stop slaughtering these people. That's a true American, that's a true hero. Now to the bad guys. Joe Biden, guess who his top donor is? Yep, AIPAC. Taking $11.2 million over the course of his career. In US Senate history, no one has taken more campaign contributions from AIPAC than Joe Biden. So Joe Biden says, I want credit because I told Israel to cut it out. And I told them that there'd be no malarkey, and I waved my finger at them. Meanwhile, while Bernie's saying, not another nickel, Joe Biden is saying, oh, please, please, Congress, rush through the $14 billion for more bombs and more destruction. And Israel, I will wag the finger publicly. Hey, Michigan voters, Minnesota voters, remember, I care about Palestinians. Wink. Meanwhile, AIPAC, don't worry. I will help you guys, you lobbyists here, get money to a foreign government so they could kill so many more Palestinians. So Joe Biden, spare us your bull, okay? Yes. We're not mainstream media. We're not gonna believe any of your obvious lies. Until you stop the money, until you stop funding this genocide, all of your words are so empty. They're such trash. And if you say, oh, but you guys, hey, are you guys, you seem emotional about this, and you aren't? Guys, did you see the starving babies? So we showed you 2 weeks ago, they started starving to death already. There was already a couple of dozen dead. And then you see the babies, and they look like the pictures of the videos look like they're out of the Holocaust. And every day I wake to John's point, every day I wake up thinking, how many more children starve today in Palestine? So with all those kids starving to death in the year 2024, I'm supposed to give Biden credit for mildly criticizing Netanyahu while he funds every dollar that Netanyahu wants to murder more Palestinians. And yes, I said murder, because it's definitely murder. You don't get to imagine, last thing, imagine if the shoe's on the other foot. So that even for the Israeli zealots, I don't know if there's any chance you could open their mind even 1%. But if they can, think about it. Imagine that Israel attacked Hamas and killed, or Gaza and killed 1,200 people there. And we decided that was bad. So we let Hamas kill 33,000 Israelis. And we're funding Hamas, America is, in this hypothetical. And now they've killed 23,000 Israeli women and children. And then they're starving a million Jews to death. And we see these pictures of their babies and children starving to death. Imagine we sent $14 billion to Hamas or to Palestinians or to anyone else that's doing that. We would never, ever, ever do that. Why? Because Israeli lives are worth 1,000 times what Palestinian lives are to American politicians who are all crooks and take money from foreign government lobbyists, which are legalized bribes so that they say, I don't care about Palestinian lives at all. AIPAC, you send me the money, I send you the money back 10,000 times more. You give me $11 million, I give you $14 billion. And it's not my money anyway, it's the taxpayer money. And I will help you kill more Palestinian children. Because as long as I get paid, that's who Joe Biden is. Prove me wrong, Joe Biden. Prove me wrong. You won't. Instead, you will bow your head. You will have mainstream media do propaganda for you and go, oh, well, oh, he wagged his finger. He wagged two fingers. Shut up, reporters. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. How come not a single mainstream media reporter in this country has reported that he's taken $11 million from AIPAC? You don't think that's relevant? You don't think that's relevant? Okay, well then 99% of Americans would find you to be clinically insane if you think $11 million is not relevant to a politician. So why are you covering up the corruption that is built into the system that is killing all those people? Both our establishment media and our establishment politicians like Joe Biden and 100% of the Republican Party are hopeless. All they care about is those juicy, juicy legalized bribes. Bribes, bribes, bribes. Now from foreign governments, so-called funneled through American citizens so they could be legal. But that is what's murdering the Palestinian citizens, and that is a fact. We're gonna take a break, we'll be back. Back on TYT, Cenk, John, and Nina with you guys. Also, Jermaine T, who just joined by hitting the join button below, and Vicky R, who gifted a membership. You guys are awesome. John.
Okay, let's jump into it.
Can I have 30 milkshakes and also some chicken? I'm going to take care of the customers. This is good. Making a lot of money. Everyone get rich, right?
Like that.
Well, we took care of those colleges.
Much better than Biden is. I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump. We support you.
Okay. So Donald Trump went to Chick-fil-A and Fox News and the right-wing media are loving it. Even Jesse Waters, a guy who has been very clear on the record of opposing men drinking milkshakes, he was a fan. Watch this.
Hugs, selfies, and the Lord's chicken. Today, Donald Trump showed what love is, hitting up a Chick-fil-A in Atlanta. People like Trump because Trump likes people. It's that simple. Being around Trump's fun. And Johnny was right. The love is real. I think these are one of the moments, the Chick-fil-A Trump moment, that you're just going to remember years later and say, oh yeah, 2024 campaign, the Chick-fil-A moment.
Well, it's just emblematic of how good Trump is in these unscripted moments, Jesse.
If you had handed that script to a couple of news broadcasters on North Korean state media, they would have been like, are you kidding me? That was amazing. We'll be remembering this for years. That time that Donald Trump went to Chick-fil-A for a photo op and then taunted all the workers by saying you're getting rich when he would oppose any increase to their wages. You remember that time? It was amazing. But it wasn't just amazing, it was a demonstration of why you should not fear Donald Trump becoming a dictator. Take a look at this.
Democrats and the mainstream media just can't stop calling former President Trump a threat to democracy. Time and time again, we've heard them repeat the same phrase ad nauseum. Take a listen for yourself.
What, in your view, constitutes the primary threat to freedom and democracy at home?
Donald Trump. Seriously.
Objectively speaking, factually speaking, without any bias or skew whatsoever, makes him a greater threat to American democracy than Joe Biden.
He undermines and unravels the rule of law. And the other is that he weakens and unravels core democratic institutions.
Is he really? The former president has been busy on the campaign trail, and yesterday's visit to an Atlanta Chick-fil-A is now going viral online. Trump treated customers to chicken and milkshakes, appealing to voters with a campaign strategy and some argue just a personality trait of meeting people, of meeting voters where they are.
That is amazing. Again, North Korean state media. They say he'll be a dictator, but will he? He gave people a sandwich. I leave it up to you, America, to decide. That's insane. Obviously, they love that appearance. They love that appearance so much that they talked about his stupid photo op at Chick-fil-A for 2 minutes longer than they talked about the, for them, disastrous Supreme Court decision in Arizona. They talked about Chick-fil-A for 26 minutes and Arizona for 24. And much of their coverage of Arizona was Sean Hannity asserting that this was something the Democrats wanted. He went on an extended rant right before the Republicans killed an effort to overturn that disastrous law. This is amazing. Like, I'm sure there were people there, as we will discuss, that liked that Donald Trump was doing this photo op, but that's all it was. And I remember them singing a slightly different tune when Joe Biden went out for ice cream with Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's just, you know, a man of the people now because he went for chicken and milkshakes.
Yeah, I was going to mention that as well, John. So we're going to get to the most fraudulent part of this entire operation at Chick-fil-A in a second. Because, man, this trick they did with that one African-American woman you saw is a hell of a political trick. But before we even get there, look, first of all, if you say, hey, should Trump go and do these kind of events? Is it a good idea politically? The answer is yes, it is. So he did something like this at a McDonald's a little while back, and I gave him credit for it. And I said, hey, that's well played. That's retail politics. And he actually does like McDonald's. And I said, it reminds me of the time Bill Clinton used to do that. And so if you're principled, you have to stay principled, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, right? So I thought Bill Clinton did a good job of, like, you know, hamming it up, if you will, at a McDonald's. And so did Donald Trump. And the Democrats could learn a thing or two from that. And so he's just, now that he saw that that worked, he's going back to that same well. He's going to Chipotle soon. You'll see him at a Burger King near you, right? But no problem. It's good politics, and I don't mind it at all. It's a good photo op, okay? But when you say, can you believe Joe Biden talked about serious policy while eating an ice cream cone? That is so disrespectful. And I can't, oh, look at Trump with the Chick-fil-A and he's stuffing it into his mouth. He's awesome. What? Both of those things can't be true. And you just heard me be principled. Good luck trying to find that on Fox News or anywhere in right-wing media. But it gets worse than that. So when she says, well, since he enjoys a chicken sandwiches, obviously he can't be a dictator. Wait, now you're conflating two completely different issues. It's one thing to say, hey, that's politics well played. And another thing to say, that's why he didn't use fake electors to try to do a coup against America. No, but he did do that. Mm-hmm. I got news for you. Some dictators like chicken sandwiches. Those two issues are not related. And wait till you hear the worst part of this trick, which we'll get to in a second. But Nina.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's a good retail politician. He's a faux populist. So he's very convincing. Like most snake oil salesmen, he gets the job done. But I think the point about, I mean, he was in the ATL, he was in Atlanta, Georgia. So you see the African-American community really represented there. The thing that stuck out for me was the young African-American woman who said, you know, you got our vote. We're not going to believe what the media has to say. That is going to be one of the biggest concerns that the Democratic Party should have even before Trump stepped foot in a Chick-fil-A. The polling is showing it. We know how people are feeling. African-American community is feeling, not really feeling President Biden as they did in 2020. I believe that this, he just has to peel off a few. He's never going to get the majority.
Yeah.
But all he has to do is peel off a few. That was quite telling. What that young woman had to say. And yeah, she's not the only one saying it. I've heard it myself, even when I was in Chicago just about a month ago. So people are saying it all over the country.
So that is true, and it's backed up by the polling. But man, they supercharged it with the trick that they did.
Yeah, so yeah, and I'm gonna get to that. I just wanna briefly say, again, like, yeah, retail politics, all that stuff. But like, if Fox is a real news, obviously they're never gonna criticize him. They're, again, North Korean state media. He doesn't want their wages to go up. That's in Atlanta. He tried to overturn the results of the election in Georgia, specifically in Georgia. He didn't want anyone in Atlanta's vote to count if they voted against him. Like, again, so like the idea that, well, obviously he can't be an authoritarian. He threw a milkshake at someone. Like, yeah, but he wants them to stay in a state of economic degradation and he doesn't want them to have any political voice. It's just amazing to me that Fox is so in the bag for Trump once again when they briefly looked like they might be willing to criticize him. But in any event, let's turn to what we've been previewing. The thing that the right-wing media seems to love most about Donald Trump's trip to Chick-fil-A is that it's genuine, that it's authentic, it's real. Nothing suspicious or questionable going on, but is there? Take a look at this.
I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump. We support you.
We support you. You.
Okay, 4 p.m. We've been 4 p.m.
Come here, let me give you a hug.
Please do.
The dictator on day one hoax and the fine people hoaxes just got cooked like a sack of waffle fries. These are genuine interactions that you cannot fake. You'll never see videos like this on the news. It's too real.
Well, we're showing it. We're the news. Also, can you fake them? We're going to look into that. Again, if Mussolini had hugged someone, still a bad guy. Hitler wasn't like one panini handed out to a voter away from being a Democrat. That's not how any of this works, Jesse Waters. But he talked about that woman, that genuine, authentic interaction. And yes, that video was real. It was not a deep fake. That woman was real. She was actually there. And he did actually hug her. It's there on video. We don't have any video of anything like that happening with like Don Jr. or Eric. So this does seem real. You know, it's verified. But so is her actual identity, because that is apparently Michaela Montgomery. So she's in that clip, and she eventually went directly on to Fox News. They're just not just commenting on her, but she went to Fox, and here's what she said.
Of course, in the excitement of everything, I wasn't able to really relay my message, but the general consensus or social media would have you thinking that if President Trump were to show up to the HBCU campuses or walk around the AUC community, that like some angry mob would form or a riot would ensue and that he would not be welcomed. And clearly the sentiment in that room the other day was the complete opposite.
And look, I agree with the point she made. I don't think that him simply going to an HBCU would cause a riot to form. Generally, riots only form when he goes to DC in anticipation of inauguration. But anyway, she is not simply a random concerned citizen. She's actually kind of got a stake in this thing. So she apparently is a Republican Party intern, a former Blexit City director. That's the organization founded by Candace Owens. And so it is possible that she just happened to be at Chick-fil-A when he randomly went there. Or it could be that this thing is not as genuine and random. It wasn't like he gave a speech or a fundraiser. I think he was there for a court appearance actually. And then he wanted a chicken sandwich and he talked to the people he saw there. They filled the restaurant with supporters of his. And not even just random supporters drawn from Atlanta, of which there are many, I'm sure, but literally people who have worked for the Republican Party that are activists for conservative causes. And so to simply act like that's an organic interaction seems a little bit disingenuous. What do you think?
Well, it's not a matter of opinion, it's a fact. They definitely rigged it. There's no question about it. So look, both things are true. Now, in a positive way for Donald Trump, I actually think that he was pretty good on HBCUs, and he doesn't get enough credit for that. So look at us being honest and fair and objective, right? And he passed a law that got them more money, and so they appreciate him on those campuses. I get it, right? And on the polling, he is doing better with younger black voters. But every part of this Chick-fil-A thing was staged. She works now for Charlie Kirk's organization, and then there's people online talking about like, oh, they did that photo op in a brilliant way. That was orchestrated. Of course it was orchestrated. A woman who was working for Candace Owens' organization, now works for Charlie Kirk, happened to show up at the same exact Chick-fil-A that Donald Trump was at. And did you notice what she said in the interview there with Fox News? She says, oh, in all that excitement, I wasn't able to relay my exact message. Why? You were a random person that came to a Chick-fil-A with a prepackaged message you had to relay, and you weren't able to relay it? Is she just saying that to her employers? Like, I know that as I was hugging him, I was supposed to do this talking point and that talking point, and I only got 2/3 of my talking points in, but do I still get paid? That was not authentic. And what's awesome about it was the Jesse Waters intro. Yeah, I can't fake something like this. As he's faking the story. That's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, look, it's useless to ask Jesse Waters or Fox News any questions. They'll just lie. But if he was a real journalist, it would be great to ask him So did you know the whole thing was fake when you were saying it couldn't be fake and you were part of being fake? Or did they also fake you out? Mm-hmm. And so that part I don't know, to be fair, Nina.
Even if she as the individual was not being genuine, there is a genuine sentiment out there though that the Democratic Party should be made aware of. And John, your point about Trump is the antithesis of all the things that most of those workers at Chick-fil-A need. Most voters will not know that, you know, because he is so good on the stump. And the Democratic Party has to do a better job of getting out there among the people and helping them to understand and not just understand, but tell them what they're materially going to do for them. It's one thing to say that Donald J. Trump, and this is true, is against the things that will materially change the lives of most working class people in this country. It's another thing to also say that in the first two years of the Biden administration, they really did nothing beyond what happened during COVID, which was, you know, forced. They did that very well, but they did not extend those programs. They didn't increase the minimum wage. The PRO Act did not pass. You know, they did not protect the rail workers at first and et cetera, et cetera. So all of these things are vitally important. When it comes to the corporatist wings of both parties, it is getting harder and harder to tell the difference. And that is the major point. For me in all of this.
Yeah, last thing I'll say on it is, Nina's said it earlier in the show, Donald Trump's a great fake populist, right? And this is classic fake populism. But the Democrats give that breathing room to grow because they don't deliver in exactly the ways that Nina mentioned.
Yeah. Okay, why don't we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump's fortune is going down about $1 billion a day or so. So we'll tell you, is that real? Well, we'll explain when we come back. All right, back on TYT, Cenk, John, and Nina with you guys. Also, Angela H. and Nathaniel Lee, who just joined on YouTube by hitting the join button. Love you guys, appreciate you. Great to have you as part of the Young Turks. And that goes double for Kaneel, who upgraded membership. And you could also upgrade through the join button. Thank you for supporting us through the tough times. John.
Okay, let's have a little bit of fun. If you want to know how Donald Trump's company's stock is doing, all you need to know is that he went on Truth Social earlier today begging his followers to invest in it. He posted this, "I am so proud of Truth Social because I believe it represents the Make America Great Again movement. And it shows the capital S spirit and capital L love of our country. If people who believe in putting America first and want to make America great again support Truth, we will be your voice like never before. And a real voice is what our country needs because we are in decline and must bring America to greatness." Well, I don't believe that America is necessarily in decline, but his stock definitely is because it is dropping fast. On March 26, following its quite successful IPO, it was trading for nearly $75 a share. And you can see pretty much where things went from there. And I'm not a savvy investor or anything, I don't know if you are, but I don't think that's what you want your stock to look like about a month out. Now, I think it might have rallied very slightly near the end of the day. It might be up to like $33. But
it's
that's
32.
32, okay, between $32 and $33, but that's still not good. At least as of when CNBC measured it, it had dropped by more than 47% month to date, wiping out literally billions of dollars. And since Donald Trump owns 60% of the shares, 60% of the billions of dollars that went, that got Thanos'd, was his. It was his, it's not his anymore. Because he couldn't sell it, he has to wait 6 months. Now, I wanna remind all of you sort of why perhaps it's trending in this direction. Trump Media last year had revenue of just $4.1 million, which is not bad for an ice cream shop, but not good for an international social media network or platform. It reported a loss of $58 million. And honestly, like, just invest in me. I could lose $40 or $50 million and I could do it in style. And yet they're throwing all the money at him. In any event, this isn't looking good for him. He was really banking on this eventually bailing him out. That this stock, which is objectively worth absolutely nothing, would suddenly be worth billions of dollars. He'll be able to trade the stock away to some rube and suddenly he'll have money once again. But the issue is that if things continue to trend in the direction they're looking right now, in 6 months, I mean, people will be using the stock as like party favors or confetti. It's not going to be worth anything. What do you think?
Yeah, I can explain all this. So first of all, let me just tell you, I'm so mad. Because I'm mad that I missed out on the opportunity to short the stock. It was very hard to do it right in the beginning and then I got distracted. But I could have told you, and in fact, I did tell you on the air that this has no chance of success. When it was a 75, you should have shorted it. Okay, so you all should have done it. And don't worry, a lot of people did. Shorting it means betting against the stock so you make money when it goes down. Because this thing's headed to, very likely, in my opinion, now take this for what it's worth, it'll go down to zero is my guess. So let me explain why. Why is it worth billions now? But eventually might be worth zero. Because when you go into the stock market, there's supposed to be the wisdom of the masses and the prices fluctuate based on what people are willing to pay, right? And eventually the stock market, with all of its massive flaws, does get to a valuation over the long term that is relatively correct, okay? But that's over the long term and for most stocks. The bet here is that Trump fans will be completely irrational and they will give this stock a price it doesn't deserve at all. And does it deserve $32 that it closed at today? Did it deserve the $79 that it peaked at? It's laughable, guys. It's laughable. So based on the numbers that they put out there, Young Turks would then be worth at least $32 billion.
Nice.
Ooh, I didn't know we were that rich. Okay. It's comical. So the whole thing is a Ponzi scheme. And the reason why Trump is going out there and making a plea that like, hey, if you love this country, make sure that you're still buying the Truth Social stock, is because he's gotta make it to 6 months. That's when he can start dumping it. So if it's not worth zero by then, he's gonna make money anyway, right? And it's when it eventually goes to zero, everyone who bought it is gonna get stiff. Guys, it's not just that they lost $58 million last year. They only made $4 million in revenue. And okay, then you ask them, what's your plan to catch up? Some stocks catch up, you know, they used to put on a big investment like Amazon did, right? Obviously a very different business, etc. And yes, they had way more. Amazon always had like literally thousands of times this revenue by the time they went to public, etc. But even so, they were losing money. You were like, oh, can they turn it around? No, their idea was to gain market share and then later become profitable, which they did spectacularly so, right? Could this do the same thing? No, it cannot. Because when you ask them, what's your plan to make money later? They're like, well, Trump is magic. Trump is magic, so we're magically gonna make money. That's not a thing. You have to give us a business plan. And now it's a publicly traded company. You have to show people, here's the amount of revenue we can make. Here's how we would make it. That's what a public company is supposed to do. This thing's a joke. Everybody in Wall Street is thinking, come on in, suckers. Come on in, because we're all gonna short it. That's why it was so hard to get in on the short. And we're all gonna make a ton of money taking money from these poor saps that are MAGA. Yeah. That's just reality. And you're seeing it on the stock market. That's as real as it gets, Nina.
A Trump business or Trump venture performing true to form. I mean, if Trump is part of it, this is what's gonna happen. So none of us should be surprised. I mean, I'm surprised anybody's surprised.
It's like, it makes Trump's stakes look like a good business, because at least there were stakes.
Look, guys, I give two things to back up what Nina's saying as quickly as I can. One, he bought this airline company. First of all, literally everything he's bought has gone bankrupt, okay? Outside of the couple of properties he has left, like the golf properties of Mar-a-Lago, right? So he bankrupted six major businesses. One of them was an airline company. He buys it, and it's like a commuter airline. People actually going from New York to Boston, New York to DC, I think, et cetera. And they have to keep costs low. And he's like, no, I want our toilets to be golden. So he spent a ton of money on the airline and it went bankrupt. Okay, he in Atlantic City, he started three casinos, all at the same time. Everybody's like, they're gonna cannibalize one another. It's like they're not, there's not enough customers in Atlanta. He's like, no, I wanna see my name in lights in three different places. Trump, Trump, Trump. All of them went bankrupt. This guy's a moron of the highest order. The only reason why people think he's a good businessman is because of Jeff Zucker, who put him on The Apprentice and pretended that he was a successful businessman. When Zucker knew for a fact that he was a loser, one of the biggest failures in American business history. He's already lost $400 million twice. Okay, so True Social. Hey, listen, if you don't believe me and you're a right winger, oh yeah, you young Dirty, you guys are biased, man. It's not gonna work out. Go buy a stock. Go buy a stock and I'll go short it. And then we'll see who's right. Okay?
Speaking of which, very good evidence of him being a bad businessman. And I have no evidence of this. I don't know how one would acquire evidence of this, but is there any chance? Because you know, he needs money. He's gotta wait 6 months. Is there any chance that he shorted it? Is there any way that we would be able to find out if he or members of his family shorted it?
Oh, how would we ever know? Wait. John's onto something really good. Because Trump's not smart enough to short his own stock. Okay? And then there could be issues, etc. And he really desperately wants to take money out of that thing. He's gotta keep it afloat for 6 months until contractually he can start to take money out. But could Jared Kushner have shorted the stock? I don't know. That would be an interesting investigation.
Interesting. Should Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor retire from the Supreme Court in advance of this year's presidential election, giving Joe Biden the chance to replace her? And I say the chance because if you believe it's a guarantee he'd be able to, I will remind you of what Mitch McConnell has done in the past. But this is a topic that was raised by a couple of high profile, like sort of think pieces about it. You had an article in The Atlantic definitively titled Sonia Sotomayor Should Retire Now. And then Nate Silver added his two cents saying, yes, she should retire. Not a remotely close call if you want to avoid a 7-2 conservative majority. I work through some of the math here. And look, it's not difficult to figure out why they think this. If Trump wins, and that almost necessarily would mean that they maintain control of the House, the Republicans, and they would gain control of the Senate. Then if someone were to retire, he'd be the one to replace them. He'd replace them with some 40-year-old insane person from the Federalist Society or a religious cult, and they would be around for 30 or 40 years. Sonia Sotomayor is one, I believe she might be among the oldest remaining Supreme Court justices. So that's the argument. But what's interesting is no one on the Democratic side appears to be biting. You know, there's the pundits and all that. But in terms of the politicians, it doesn't really seem to be going anywhere. You had Senator Richard Blumenthal is one of the only ones I could find sort of considering the idea. He said the Democrats should learn a lesson after what happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's not like there's any mystery here about what the lesson should be. The old saying, graveyards are full of indispensable people, ourselves in this body included. That's a rough quote, but you get where he's going with that. But that's pretty much it. I mean, Senator Pete Welch said she's not 70. I believe she's about to turn 70 actually. But I might remind some of my colleagues to look around, check their birth certificate. She's going full speed ahead. I'm not aware of any significant issues and I'm aware of extraordinary competence. This is not an RGB situation. So in 2014, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was 82 years old, 13 years older than Sonia Sotomayor, who does turn 70 in June of this year. Now, in terms of like being able to do the workload, she has recently spoken about how cases are becoming more complicated. The workload is quite a bit. She said that she's become tired due to bigger cases. But she has never indicated that she doesn't think that she can do the job. And the vast majority of politicians, including progressives, are having nothing of this. Elizabeth Warren says the talk is nonsense. Where did this come from? She's doing a great job. Ro Khanna said, I don't think you can tell the first Latina Supreme Court justice who's still in her 60s when to retire. And then he said some members of Congress are in their 70s and 80s, which is a good point. Representative Ilhan Omar says, I'm not in favor of telling people when they should retire. I just think it's a waste of energy and time to have these silly debates. Representative Ocasio-Cortez says, I haven't really delved into that conversation much. And I only wanted to quote her there as a response to the business guy who said that delve appearing in writing is proof that it was AI generated because nobody used that word. Well, AOC used it. In any event, nobody's really biting on this.
No, there's something weird about this story. And so number one, they keep saying that progressives are calling for this, except the only progressive they mentioned in any of the stories is Mehdi Hasan. All the progressive legislators, AOC, Ro Khanna, etc., are all saying nonsense. So if this feels like a weirdly manufactured story, and that's where my spidey sense is going with this. So are Mehdi Hasan, Nate Silver, etc., Richard Blumenthal, are they being inauthentic and they're part of some sort of plot? No. I'm positive that their opinions are authentic. Is it a good idea? No, it's a spectacularly bad idea. Number one reason why it's a bad idea is what John started with. You think Biden is guaranteed to be able to get a replacement through? I have it at like 11% chance. Like Joe Biden's one of the weakest people I've ever seen in politics. Last time they were able to block a nominee for a whole year, you think they can't block a nominee now? Well, you know, the Democrats have a tiny lead in the Senate, so the Republicans can't do anything. What are you talking about? Manchin has already said he'd vote with the Republicans. This is like, this feels like an ambush of extreme proportions, right? And why is this even this crazy to bring it up? If Biden were to tell her to retire because she's 69, he's 81. Okay, and for all the people who are saying like, oh, she's too old, and then you ask about Biden, they're like, oh, he's perfectly young. That doesn't make any sense at all. No, I guarantee you, if she steps down, then the chances of it being 7-2 Republicans is much higher, because the Republicans will fight like hell to block the next appointment, and they'll almost certainly win. And then Trump right now has the lead in the polls, and then he'll get to nominate another conservative. So I don't think that Nate Silver and the other guys are part of the ambush. But the amount of massive hype that this has gotten in media, with all of the articles saying progressives are pushing this, it's weird. It's, you know, groupthink, corporate groupthink is like, retire. And so be careful, as Admiral Akbar would tell you, it might be a trap.
Agreed on all the points. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor should go absolutely nowhere. She is a youngin, as you laid out, Jink, among the president and many of the people in the Senate, the US Senate in particular. She's doing a spectacular job, and there is no reason. And one of the most important points, Jink, that I had in my notes too, which is even if she were to leave, there's no guarantee. There's absolutely no guarantee that President Joe Biden would be able to get another Supreme Court justice in time. So no, let Justice Sonia stay right where she is. And I wish they would stop propagating that progressives are pushing this, because progressives are not pushing this. It's not even coming from the grassroots, less known any of the progressive elected officials in the United States Congress. So this is nothing. I mean, we got other things to be talking about and not trying to force Justice Sonia Sotomayor out of her justice seat.
Yeah, one last quick thing to build on what Nina said. All of a sudden, the entire National Press Corps cares about an op-ed Mehdi Hasan wrote. And then attaches all progressives to that one article. Curious, because I've seen Mehdi
write. The far right wing too, Jink. They've been called, the far right wing wants her out, you know?
Yeah. So like Mehdi's written a lot of brilliant op-eds that went nowhere in the national media because it didn't serve people's purpose. And all of a sudden he represents all progressives on this one issue. No, there's something fishy about that. But either way, we're all clear. Do not retire. Terrible idea. Okay.
That's right.
All right, we gotta go, guys. Thank you so much. And everybody check out Some of Us Are Someone. We Are Somebody, Nina's organization, and of course Damage Report, that's John's show, right here on the TYT Network. Okay, we're gonna come back to a whole nother hour with a new power panel, and Matt Gaetz is in a lot of trouble, but I have a very surprising opinion on that. So wait for that twist and turn, we'll be right back.